listening to realclearduff.com.
Today's shiur has been dedicated for the Refuah Shleima of Shoshana Reisel Bas Chana Gitta. In the schos of the Torah learning from this shiur, she should merit a speedy recovery and Hashem should answer Avon's tefillahs for her Refuah Shleima Bekarov. And we are on Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis, 9 lines up from the bottom, the last word on the line where it says Ahu and then the Amr Lechavrei. On yesterday's daf, Rav Nachman taught us that if somebody fails to establish a chazakah on land that he's claiming that he's been occupying, like for example, if he can only prove he occupied the land for 2 years, he didn't meet the 3-year threshold, then Rav Nachman ruled that hadri ara v'hadri peiri, and not only, of course, must the occupant return the property, the land, and he must also return the fruits that he eaten, all the produce he consumed while he was on the land. Because, being that he couldn't establish a chazakah, so the halacha assumes that the land really belonged this whole time to the marikama, the previously known owner. So that person could sue the occupant for all the produce he had eaten while he was staying there. The Gemara today begins with a variation of this case, and will initially compare this case to the famous case of Nascha the Rabbi Abba. So the Gemara begins. Ahu da amrle lechavrei. We start with the classic situation. Reuven comes over to Shimon, asking, demanding, "My bias, b'hai ara, what are you doing in this land? This is my land. What are you doing here?" Amrle Shimon answers, "What do you mean, Reuven? Minach zavnes vechalte shnei chazaka. Why, I purchased the property from you, and to support my claim, I have eaten. I've been occupying, been using this property for the years of chazaka." For 3 years, and therefore, even though I don't have Vishtar, but since I've been here for 3 years and you didn't protest, which proves that obviously I did legitimately purchase the land from you. Now, you can't just say you have a chazak if to prove that you were there occupying the property for 3 years. So in this case, what happened was, I see chad sahada the ochla tlashne. Shimon was only able to bring one witness who testified that Shimon was here for 3 years using this property. Now, of course, to establish anything in court in halacha, you need two witnesses. And therefore, Shimon failed to establish chazakah here. So there's no question that Shimon was obligated here to return the land to Reuven. The question was regarding the peiros, the produce Shimon had consumed this time that he was on the land. Can Reuven sue Shimon for that? Must he pay Reuven for all the produce he had consumed? So the Gemara says, Savu Rabbanan kemeid Abaye lemeimar. The Rabbanan who were learning by Abaye thought to say, Hainu nascha de Rabbi Abba. The question in this case, as far as the peiros, boils down to the exact same question as in the case of nascha de Rabbi Abba. So nascha is like a bar of silver. And this was the case. The who gavra the chataf nascha mechavrei. Once upon a time, somebody grabbed this nascha, this silver bar, from the hand of his friend. Asil kameid Rabbi Ami, the two came before Rabbi Ami for judgment. And Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Abba kameid. Rabbi Abba was present in the case. And then I see chad sahada the michtav chatva mine. The one who was grabbed from brought one witness who testified that yes, he saw this grabber grab away a silver bar from this fellow here. Amr Lay, the other one responded, yes, it's true, I readily admit, Chatvi, and I grabbed this Nascha from this person. But there was nothing at all wrong with that, for Vididi Chatvi, I grabbed what was mine, this silver bar belongs to me, so I had every right to grab it. So this presented an interesting question. For Amr Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Ami, when deliberating the case, said, continuing to Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph, Heichi Nidainua Dayani Lahai Dinam. How should the judges judge this case? This is a hard one. For let's go through the possibilities. Perhaps the correct ruling here is, Lishalem, being that this person admits that he grabbed the property from his friend, perhaps therefore the correct ruling is that the grabber should pay. Because we have a situation where one person was holding onto a bar, and of course, if you have possession of something, we assume it belongs to you. And then this guy came along and grabbed it from him. So it seemed that the ruling is that he simply has to pay. But the Rami says, no, not so simple. For Leka Trei Sahadi, there were not two witnesses here that established as a fact in court that this person grabbed it all. One witness does not establish anything as a fact in court. In order to establish anything as a fact in court, you need two witnesses. Now, it's true that the defendant himself admitted to having grabbed the nascha. However, the point is, he could have easily gotten away with not mentioning that. He could have simply said, I don't know what this guy is talking about. This is my silver bar. I never grabbed it from him. And then he would have easily won the case. And so Migu, since he could have just simply claimed that I never grabbed this from him, therefore this person has credibility. And he is believed, therefore, in his actual claim that the dichatvi, yes, I grabbed it, but I grabbed what was mine. So he certainly can't simply hand out a ruling that the grabber has to pay, since his position is strengthened by a migu. So you'll say, okay, if he has a migu, he didn't have to admit anything. There's no, you know, enough two witnesses. He could have just flatly denied the whole thing. So we believe whatever he does say. So then, lipatre. Maybe you'll say, therefore, that the correct ruling is that he's simply exempt. He doesn't have to pay. But Rami says, no, that's not right either. For ik echad sahada. For there was a single witness who did testify that this person grabbed the nascha. And although we mentioned that you need two witnesses to actually establish something in halacha, that doesn't mean that one witness is worth zero. In fact, if one witness testifies that somebody owes somebody money, the halacha is that generates a shvua obligation. The defendant must now swear against the Eid Echad and swear, no, it's not true, I don't owe this person money. And then he won't have to pay. We don't simply disregard the Eid Echad. And therefore, this complicates the whole matter. Because now let's reevaluate. We're saying he could have claimed that I never grabbed. Well, not so simple anymore. There's an Eid Echad here who testified that you grabbed, and you would have had to take an oath against an Eid Echad if you would claim that you never grabbed. And certainly most people are not comfortable taking a false oath. So there goes the migu. Migu only works if it's realistic that if this person was willing to lie, he would be willing to lie with that other claim. Now there's a big downside to the other claim, to the claim of I never grabbed. I.e. has to take a shvua. So therefore no more migu. And therefore, to say that this person is simply exempt is not the right halacha either. And I'll say, okay, fine. Ultimately, he's up against an Eid Echad. There's one witness who says he did grab. And again, what is the power of an Eid Echad? To impose a shvua obligation on the defendant. So perhaps the right halacha here then is l'shtava. Let the defendant here swear against the Eid Echad. And that will get rid of the Eid Echad, and then you could be exempt. Maybe that's the right halacha. But Rabbi Yami says there's one little problem. This defendant cannot swear against the Eid Echad. For ha'amar michtiv chatva. He already admitted to us that he did grab. He totally agreed with the Eid Echad's testimony. And therefore, v'kivin di'amar d'chatva havi leike gazlan. Being that he admitted already to exactly what the Eid Echad said, in effect, the defendant here is like a gazlan. He's like a thief. In that, just as a thief, if somebody, let's say, is a bank robber, that person is disqualified from ever taking an oath. We don't trust him. So too, this grabber is disqualified from taking the oath in this particular case because he already agreed with the Eid Echad. How could he swear against the Eid Echad if you agreed with him? So actually making an oath here is not an option. So what is the halacha? It seems to go around in circles. It's like a catch-22. None of the possibilities seem to tell us the correct halacha. So what is the halacha here? Now, we mentioned that Rabbi Abba was present there, so Rabbi Abba offered his opinion on the halacha of this case. Amar Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba spoke up and said that, in my opinion, this is the halacha here. Ultimately, we have a situation where having mechuyev shvua she'enu yachal yishava. This defendant has a halachic obligation to swear because of the Eid Echad. But, as was pointed out, he is unable to practically swear. That's what we have here. Says Rabbi Abba, what's the halacha in such a case? The halacha is that if you have a halachic obligation to swear, and you're unable to do so, like let's say the person is a gazlan, you can't have him swear because we don't trust him. The halacha is then, okay, if you can't swear, now you're going to have to pay. Says the halacha in this case, this grabber has to pay. Because the testimony of the Eid Echad imposed an oath obligation. Of course, he can't swear against the Eid Echad because he admitted already that he did grab it. Therefore, the only option left is that he has to pay. So the rabbis who were in front of Abaye thought to say that Rabbi Abba's ruling in this case informs us of the halacha in the case that we started the daf with. Where again, Hashem claims that he was occupying the property for 3 years. He has a chazakah, so he had a right to be here and eat all the peiros, but he only had one witness that he had occupied the property for 3 years. Therefore, having failed to establish a chazakah, the land goes back to the previous owner. Regarding the peiros, it seems the same situation as Nascha de Rabbi Abba. For ultimately, we have a situation where there's one witness who came into court and testified that this person, Shimon, who, again, we concluded is not the legitimate owner of the land, was eating peiros on the land. He was eating produce on the land for 3 years. What happens when an Ed Echad testifies? It generates a shvua obligation. Okay, so you'll say Shimon will swear against the Ed Echad. That, of course, is not an option, because Shimon himself admitted that he was eating peiros here for 3 years. He just wanted to claim that the diachli, I was eating peiros, yes, but they're mine, because Shimon is trying to say it's his land. And so Shimon is mechuyev shvua, but he's in a yachli shava. He can't practically take that oath, and therefore applying Rabbi Abba's ruling, the halacha should be that Shimon should have to be mishalem. That's what the Rabbanim before Abaye proposed. But Abaye rejects the analogy. Armalu Abaye. Abaye said to them, me dummy, are these cases comparable? He says, no. There's a key difference between these cases, and that is, Hasam sahad leruye kasi. We understand Rabbi Abba's ruling there, by the Nascha, how through the Ed Echad ultimately we require the grabber to pay, because clearly there, the Ed Echad was coming to testify against the grabber, to make him pay. How do we know that's the situation? Well, the test for that is the fact that Kiyasi Achrina Bahadei Mafkina Lamine. If there would have been a second witness, what would have been the ruling, of course, if two witnesses testified that this person grabbed the silver bar from this one? Of course, in that case, it would rule that the grabber would have to pay, and he could say all he wants, that the dichatvi was mine, that wouldn't help. Because if it's an established fact in court that some guy went over to somebody else and grabbed some property from him, then the grabber has no case. We have a situation where somebody had possession of something, he was muchzik, and somebody else went and grabbed it from him. We assume that that's an act of stealing, unless the other person can bring clear proof that no, it really belonged to him. If he just claims I grabbed it was mine, that's nothing. He would clearly lose in that case. Because independent of his admission to having grabbed, we have two witnesses that establish that he grabbed. So therefore, the Gemara says, we see that the testimony about the grabbing is coming l'aruya. It's coming as a testimony against the grabber. And therefore, although in this case it was only one witness, we say that, okay, the one witness generates an oath obligation, and if the defendant can't swear, then he has to pay. As opposed to, ha-ha, here in our case, if Shimon was occupying the land, it's the opposite. This Eid Echad was coming in to say that Shimon was here for 3 years. It was not coming to testify against Shimon, rather, l'siyuakasi. The Eid Echad was coming to help Shimon. It was to help Shimon's case. How do we know that? For kiyasa achrina makamina labiyade. The proof is, if there was a second witness testifying that Shimon was here for 3 years, what would the halacha have been? Of course, Shimon would have won with the cheskas gimel shanim. That would have established that Shimon was here for 3 years using the land and no one made a macha. So Shimon would have been able to keep the land and, of course, wouldn't have to pay for the produce. He was clearly eating his own produce. So therefore, it's obvious that the Ed Echad, in this case, when it's just one witness, the purpose of the Ed Echad was an attempt to help Shimon. So Abai argues, how could you say that an Ed Echad brought to help Shimon forces Shimon to swear and then have to pay? It doesn't make sense. The Ed Echad is here clearly, the Siyue, to help Shimon. We can't take that Ed Echad and say, okay, now Shimon has to pay because of the Ed Echad. Because this Ed Echad is for Shimon, not against Shimon. Abaye concludes, if you do want to discuss an equivalent case to Rabbi Abba's Nascha case, the case of the silver bar, you want to find a case that's like that in a scenario of an occupant of the property, says Abaye, then l'chad sahada ulitarti shnei ulipere. The case you could discuss is, let's say again, you have Shimon who's occupying the property. Reuven says, what are you doing here? Shimon says, I have chazakah, but in this case, Shimon has zero witnesses to prove his claim. And so, of course, Shimon will have to leave the property, goes back to Reuven. But Reuven doesn't stop there. He says, you owe me for the fruits. And he has chatzad, he has one witness, letarti shnei, that testifies that Shimon was eating fruits from this property for 2 years. So, lepeire, so this testimony is relevant to Reuven's ability to sue Shimon for the fruits, the produce he was eating for those 2 years. And here the point is, this single witness is clearly coming leruye, it's coming to Shimon's detriment. And the proof to that is, if you would add another witness, if two witnesses would testify that this person, Shimon, was occupying Reuven's property for 2 years and no more, of course, the halacha in that case, it would be that Shimon would lose because he was occupying the property for less than the 3 years of chazakah. So this case indeed would be comparable to Nascha de Rabbi Abba, and we would say that true, it's not two witnesses, but one witness has the effect of imposing an oath obligation. And of course, Shimon here has no option of actually swearing against the Erechat since he admits that he was eating fruits here, he claims, for 3 years. And therefore, since he can't practically swear against the Erechat's claim that he was eating fruits for 2 years, we would apply Rabbi Abba's rule that if you're mechuyev shvuah neyachal lishava, then mishalem. Then that person is going to have to pay. So Shimon, in that case, indeed would have to pay for the produce he consumed. Turning to Amid Beis, the Gemara lays down a fundamental ruling. Says the Gemara, there was once a situation of vahu arba. It was a boat sitting in a river. The v'minsi Allah betray. Two people were fighting over this boat, over who owned the boat. Hi, I'm ready diu ve'I am ready diu. Both litigants were claiming, "It's my boat. It's my boat." But neither of them, at this point at least, had any evidence to back up their claims. All they had was their claims. Nor did either litigant at the time that we started judging the case have a muchzik. Nobody had physical possession of the boat. So, literally, the only thing each of them had was their claim. The fact that they wanted to claim that the boat belonged to them. Now, as Rav Nachman will say at the bottom of this amid, that we'll learn in tomorrow's shir, the halacha in such a case where the litigants have nothing other than their claims, the halacha is the court doesn't get involved in that because there's nothing to go on. And therefore, the court simply removes themselves and says, "Kol d'olam gvar, whoever is stronger should prevail. You guys fight it out. We're not going to get involved in this because, again, we have nothing to go on." However, one of the litigants made a request of the court. Asachad minayu lebeidina, one of the litigants came to the court, v'yamar, and requested tifsua, the court seize the boat in question. Why? Because he claimed that he had witnesses who were on the way. They'd be able to testify that it's his boat. So he asked the court, at the Mycena, sahadi didihi, please hold on to the boat until my witnesses come. Because he was worried that the other litigant would, meanwhile, while the witnesses were on the way, the other one would go ahead and sell the boat, and then he would have no hope of retrieving it. So he wanted the court to hold on to the boat for some time while he claimed he was going to find his witnesses. So the Gemara wonders, what's the halach here? Tafsinan, alo tafsinan. Do we grant his request and hold on to the boat for some period of time, or not? So the Gemara brings two opinions about this. Rav Huna Amar tafsinan. Rav Huna says, indeed, we'll hold on to the boat as per his request. But Rav Yehuda Amar lo tafsinan. Rav Yehuda says, the court does not seize the boat. If he asks us to do that, we don't take it. And the reason for each opinion will become clear as we continue in the Gemara. For the Gemara tells us that in this particular incident, the court ended up seizing the boat, either because they went and ruled like Rav Huna, or because, let's say, both litigants agreed to this, that for the court to hold on to the boat, in which case everybody would agree that the court should go ahead and hold on to it, if both litigants are agreeable to that. Either way, the court did take the boat in this situation. And in the end, v'lo ashkach sadi, it was clear that this litigant was never going to find witnesses, they're never going to come and testify on his behalf. And so, when that happened, Amar lahu, he asked the court to now be afkua, to now release the boat, v'kol dalam gvar, and put it in that situation where, again, essentially the court removes themselves and may the best man win. Now that he had no hopes of ever finding witnesses, now he wanted his chance to fight it out with this other guy and maybe overpower the other one and grab the boat. The Gemara says, Mafkina, nalo mafkina, do we grant his request and release the boat into the wild again, or not? Rav Yehuda Amar lo mafkina, Rav Papa Amar mafkina. Rav Yehuda says that, no, we don't release the boat. Rav Papa says we do. Okay, now, what are these opinions based on? Rav Yehuda argues that once the court takes the boat, they can't release it. Because it's one thing for the court to say, we're not getting involved in a certain case. Fine, so they don't get involved, and we let the two litigants fight it out. But once the court actually takes control of the disputed asset, Rav Yehuda holds that the court cannot then just simply release the asset into hefker, letting these people fight it out and quite possibly resulting in the true owner losing his boat. Once the court takes the boat and they're responsible for it, they can't go and just simply, you know, put it in hefker and let them fight it out. Whereas her papa argues that when the court seized the boat to begin with, it was with the full understanding that there's a very real chance that the evidence that this litigant claims he has will never materialize. And therefore, it's like they took it from the beginning with the understanding that this is a temporary thing and they might very well just put it back in its previous indeterminate status where the halacha is called Olam Gvar. So Papa says it's fine, they could release it back out into Hefker even if they took it temporarily. And the Rishbam explains that in light of this dispute about the question of, you know, once they do take it, would they release it again? Now we understand the two opinions on the question of whether the court will take it to begin with. That is, Rav Yehuda here, who says that if the court does take over the boat, they're not going to release it again if the litigant can't come up with the witnesses. That's why above he ruled that the court will not, in the first place, take the boat. Because if they take the boat, there is the possibility that they'll never be able to release it again, with the result that the true owner of the boat now for sure won't be able to get his boat. And meaning it could be that this was a ploy by the other litigant who was really just interested in causing a loss. Maybe he had some kind of grievance with this other litigant, so he wanted him to lose his property, so he asked the court to take over the boat because he falsely claimed he would have witnesses to prove it's his, knowing that the court would simply hold on to the boat forever and this other one would lose his boat. That was his goal here. So Yehuda says, therefore the halacha is, and the court does not grant his request. Whereas Rav Huna of the earlier dispute agrees with their papa here that no, if the litigant who made the request can't actually come up with the witnesses, then we'll put it back in Hefker. And therefore, it's no big deal to, you know, grant this request and temporarily hold on to the boat. And if we see that he's not going to bring those witnesses, we'll simply put it back in the original state of Hefker, where the halacha is called Olam Gvar, that whoever stronger will win the boat. And the Gemara rules the halacha, v'hilchaz of the halacha is, like Rav Yehuda, that lo tafsinan. In the first place, the court will not, you know, grab the boat. V'heche de tafes, where for whatever reason the court did seize the boat, lo mafkinan. We can't release it. We can't release this Malman Yisrael, as once the court took responsibility for it, they can't simply put it into Hefker. We're going to have to wait until somebody could come up with an actual proof before awarding the boat to anybody. So the work concludes the halacha is like Rav Yehuda.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD1. That's 855-275-7231.